Okay, welcome to the Outwear Mobile podcast. Today we've got a special edition with a special guest, the CEO of PowerShop, Ben Burge. G'day.
G'day. Thanks for having me.
And we've also got Eitan here, Director of Outwear.
Hello.
And Michael Dalich.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I should introduce you as a consultant.
Introduce you to whoever you want.
Consultant.
Whatever you
Michael
want to be
Dalich,
today.
A consultant. Well, welcome, Ben. It's great to have you here. I think we can safely say that everyone here around the table is a big PowerShop fan. Eitan introduced it to me, and since then I've claimed my $75 referral fee to about 10 of my mates.
Brilliant.
And I'm obsessively buying Power.
Brilliant.
Tell us a bit about the product.
Well, the product actually started by looking at the opposite. Right, so I'm going to do a little pitch for you.
Yep.
Yeah, mate. Just do a bit of an intro to just in case for some crazy reason that someone listening hasn't actually heard of PowerShop.
So. Sure. So I'll pitch a product. You have to use this product. You can't see it, taste it, touch it, or smell it. You're going to use this product for 3 months at a time. And during that 3 month period, you're going to have no idea how much you've used or how much it's going to cost you. And the first bit of information you're going to receive about this product says, please pay this bill for $1,800. Mm. Right? Preposterous that in 2015, such a product should exist, right?
I'd never buy anything like that.
No. but this, sadly, this is how the majority of Australian families consume electricity, which is now a massive proportion of the household budget too.
Mm.
So it's causing a lot of a lot of grief. It used to be boring. Now it's scary. So, PowerShop really started with the idea of turning that on its head. Right? So you would, know exactly how much power you were using, in pretty much real time. And you'd have an estimate of exactly how much it was going to cost you before we asked you to pay for it. So it was actually very simple.
It's great.
So,
go on.
In terms of taking that idea and then formalizing into what it is today, how did that process come about?
The whole system, so we write our own code out of New Zealand. Mm. So we have a team of Ruby on Rails guys for those who are technically minded. Mm. I'm not, by the way. and so we had the opportunity to build everything from the ground up. So we weren't trying to plug into an existing system. And at the center of the whole thing was a real celebration of failure, I guess. We just put stuff out there and some of it worked really well. Some of it was an abomination and we just chucked that out and started again. And that kind of spirit has been maintained in the business today.
It seems like there's been a real conscious effort to make this product a mobile first product. Mm. That's sort of what's leading, I think, the product success. Was that a conscious decision or did that just come from this trial and error type process?
Yeah, when PowerShop started, mobile wasn't a feature of the system. And in fact, one of the customers developed the first, an early version of a mobile experience for PowerShop, which was like amazing, really cool.
Just off their own bat.
Off their own bat.
Were there APIs they plugged into?
There was a pretty basic API. Mm-hmm. So we obviously encourage that sort of thing. When someone does that, you've got to applaud it and you've got to respect it. And so that for us was a real awakening that this was a new direction that the business should take.
How long ago was that?
That's going back a few years now. And it was pretty, even the basic model though was seeing it on the screen, on the small screen, really hit home that if you keep it simple, if you make it intuitive, people don't want to have to log into a desktop, web browser and dig around for their information. They want to have it in their pocket. Mm. And it was so obvious and so clear that then sort of set the direction for the business, for the years to come.
Mm. So PowerShop, just let's just go back in time a little bit. How old is PowerShop?
So PowerShop was started in New Zealand by a guy called Ari Sargent in around about 2008.
Okay.
Okay. So they've been going you know, since 2008, they've got about a bit over 50,000 customers, approaching 60,000 customers.
What sort of market share is that?
So the New Zealand market's probably one fifth of the size of the Australian market. So they're still, you know, relatively small, but for a challenger brand, it's been a really it's been a big success for those guys.
Right.
We officially launched PowerShop in Australia at the start of 2014.
Okay.
We're now 57,000 customers. But again, it's in a much bigger market. And obviously we had the benefit of picking up all that experience that the guys had in New Zealand first up.
How important has the rollout of smart meters been to the product?
It's a really interesting one. Smart meters make PowerShop a better product, no doubt, because you can get half hourly splits on your energy consumption. So it's a richer experience if you've got a smart meter. But on the other hand, PowerShop is the only platform that enables a dumb meter to become smart, right? So for people who don't have a smart meter, those customers can enter their own meter reads, which, you might sort of say, well, who would do that? In New Zealand, where smart meter penetration is very low, guess what the average frequency of manual meter reads is?
Weekly.
Once every 8 days,
right?
On average. Right, and there's quite a lot of customers who do it more than once a day. Right, why do they want to do that? Because they don't want to get hit with a surprise bill. They want to know that something's going wrong before they get hit with a bill for $1,800.
So when you say something's going wrong, they've left a device on that's consuming power.
Well, let's talk about a real situation. A couple of real situations. One is, a cold snap this year, right? 2015 winter. The temptation is you're down at Big W or, Harvey Norman, wherever it is, and you see a foot heater that's on sale for $20. Right. And mum thinks, well, that's pretty good value. I'll get one for Johnny, one for Sally. Keep them warm at night because they're freezing their ass off. 2 weeks later, that's, $600 worth of power because these things are so inefficient.
Now, in the old days, by electricity companies. Kind of like the printer model where it's like you make a printer for cheap and sell the ink.
I love the conspiracy theory. I just keep rolling with that. I love it. Under the old model, that would have gone on for 3 months and you'd be talking about another, $1,000 on the bill.
Mm.
All right, so people actually want to cut short some of those behaviours that are just pouring money down the drain.
Mm.
Another classic was where someone had a granny flat where their daughter lives. Daughter had left the heater on and then locked the door and gone to the beach for the week. Right. And so their heat map was going berserk and they were able to sort of, attend to the situation within a couple of days as opposed to letting it run for 90 days.
So in Victoria, I guess most people have smart meters and you've got this reasonably mature mobile product, your app that's out there in the market now. So just for people out there that haven't used the PowerShop app, I'll just give it a rundown of the functionality. It obviously lets you see where you're at in terms of your electricity usage. You can actually break that down into kind of day by day usage because if you've got a smart meter without having to do anything special yourself. And then it's got a nice feature where it gives you the ability to purchase electricity in the future at a cheaper price to what it is today. And it gives you push notifications to tell you that there's a new special coming and gives you those opportunities. So with that product, I guess becoming building out its feature list and becoming something that's truly useful, how have you seen your customers' behaviour change? Has it changed in response to the functionality of the app?
It has in a few really exciting ways. So it's introduced us to this idea of accidental conservation, right? So if you think about a typical customer story for us is one of our customers is on the commute to work on the train, looking at their device because you've got to avoid human eye contact. That's essential on the train. No one wants to look at other people, so they've got their head down looking at their device. They get a push notification as you pointed out. There's a Father's Day special or whatever it is, entitlement special we did recently, thanks to various people in Canberra. Thank you. You know, the person then grabs that special, takes about 11 seconds, and they might save $7, which if you extrapolate to an hourly rate, it's pretty good. I love that job. Once they're in the shop and they've grabbed the special, it's hard not to look at the usage. And when you look at the usage, oftentimes there's a moment where you go, oh, why am I using power over that period because I was away? Or what's that spike all about? Or, you know, that sort of thing. So in the back of their mind, they're thinking about it. They didn't want to. They weren't consciously thinking, oh, you know, I'm just going to look at my electricity usage because
I think that's a big behaviour shift that I've noticed. You know, before I got Power Shop, I had no idea. You know, I got, as you said, a bill quarterly, and I was actually thinking, we've got gas heating at home, and I was lying in bed this morning going, God, this thing has been running 24/7 for the last 3 months, and my wife keeps cranking up the thermometer. It's going to be a big bill. And I was thinking that it's got to be a Power Shop for gas.
Power Shop for gas is electricity.
Yeah.
Get off the gas.
But just in what you were saying before about sort of getting a notification if you're away and you see a pack, is there any concept of that coming in the app? Because that's what I would
yes.
love.
Yeah, the short answer is yes.
Yeah.
And the thing, the key thing for PowerShop is there's a million features that we could put in. Right, there's no shortage of ideas on what should we put in. The critical thing though is maintaining the simplicity of it. Because as soon as it becomes complex or more complex, then you're losing people.
Yeah. Ben, something you and I discussed was the pub test that you guys like to run. Do you want to maybe explain that sort of approach to the product that you guys have?
Yeah, I guess one of the frustrating things for us in terms of a sales and marketing challenge is that if we tried to explain our product on a billboard, you know, and there have been a couple of attempts. They've been shocking failures. You know, it's hard. You know, you're trying to explain to someone who's only had a quarterly bill, you know, in the past. Oh, we run a shop, and you can buy in advance if you want to, and you can see your usage. And I mean, it's too hard. Radio is not a great format either. To be fair, but the best situation for us is to have a customer who has PowerShop, has experienced PowerShop, and is down at the pub, and their mate says, oh, geez, I've just been gouged for, you know, can you shout the next jug because I don't, you know, I've just got my power bill. At which point their mate goes, oh, well, actually, have I got a story for you? And, you know, pulls out the phone and steps through it. And then, as you pointed out before, hopefully grabs the $75 by signing them up.
Yeah,
but it's a product that it's really hard to explain unless you've experienced it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly, I guess, the way that I got Danny onto it. I mean, I subscribe with PowerShop because of the renewable energy side of it, and then I didn't even know about the app. But then I got the app, and that was amazing. And then I showed the app to Danny.
I remember him telling me about PowerShop, and I'm like, "What the hell are you talking about? Like, why would I want to pre-purchase my power?" Yeah. That wasn't the hook for me. The hook for me was being able to see my my usage, which was kind of incredible.
Something else that I found really interesting as well is the fact that when you guys made the decision to bring this thing over from New Zealand and start launching here, you went through a process of, was it 12 months of testing before you launched? And, you know, sometimes when we're talking to clients and we're suggesting a couple of weeks of testing, it can be questioned, but, you know, you've gone down the path of 12 months.
Yeah.
Was that an easy decision for you guys to make, or was that was a given that had to happen before you went live? Were there some people getting itchy feet to launch this thing in the interim, or what did that sort of look like?
All of the above. So the Australian energy market, and it's not, I'm not picking on Australia particularly, energy markets worldwide are incredibly complicated, overly complicated. And that's, to be honest, that's suited the energy cartel in terms of keeping people in the dark and, you know, keeping them at arm's length from their own information. But from the perspective of a new company starting up, it just meant that, you know, integrating into regulatory systems, market systems, et cetera, was a complex process. So there was that part of it. But also we needed to test, you know, customer behaviour because, you know, while Australia and New Zealand, you know, at face value look very similar, you know, we both drink beer, we both, you know, watch various sports and have share various interests, but they're very different markets in ways, in subtle ways that, you know, we didn't know before we started. And so there was a, I think we were well served by staying in test mode for a for an extended period of time. Having said that, there were plenty of itchy feet, particularly towards the end, you know, when there was, you know, pressure on to kind of, you know, hit critical mass and all the rest of it.
So, I was just going to ask, tell us about PowerShop's maturity in terms of, you know, experience, design, and that sort of thing. So you've got this app, you talked about it, you know, you could add lots and lots of features to it, and you could do probably lots of geeky things in there that, you know, 5% of the people using it would love. So what's your approach to thinking through an idea and deciding whether you want to, whether that's something you want to include into the app or add to the app? And then how do you go around kind of testing that idea and, you know, is that something you just do internally or do you get kind of external people to look at that too?
Yeah, I guess the center of that whole process is a focus on how does it make the customer feel, right? As opposed to what does it do for the customer, because they're two very different things. And there are some things that we're a natural, you know, player to provide the functionality. I think the mistake we could make very easily is to presuppose that we have a role to play in the new value chain of the customer, and particularly in our sector, the value chain's changing so quickly with proliferation of solar and batteries and, you know, what have you. It would be, you know, really arrogant for us to sort of say, oh, we have to be at the center of all of these technological changes. So we really test whether we're the natural provider of some of those services, and we're really focused on how does the customer feel as a result of having a new feature set. In terms of how we test it and how we kind of, you know, develop that and, you know, external versus internal, all the rest of it, it's a combination, right? And not all things can be tested, right? So going to consumers and saying, oh, hey, what would you like, often produces a frustrating outcome. So there's a happy medium where you've got the bit of a prototype that, you know, you can take for a spin, and take an iterative approach to that.
How much do you use? I presume you've got some analytics in the app. How much do you use though that data to kind of shape future features or design?
Yeah, tempting as it is for me to say, oh, you know, we're kind of like Google and, you know, we're doing all this amazing, like, awesome algorithms and all the rest of it. The truth is that I think what we're doing is quite basic, right? And I don't say that in a negative way, but because the experience for the majority of consumers has been so poor, we actually just need to get some basics right, right? And get that really humming, and make that really smooth and seamless for the customer before we get too fancy. The diminishing returns on, you know, doing cutting edge, you know, predictive algorithms and all the rest of it, I mean, that'll come in time, but right now it's really not where the business is.
How disruptible are you? Could another electricity retailer build something similar and challenge you on that front?
Well, I was going to sort of have the flip question is, you know, what are you seeing in the market? What are you changing in the market? Are you seeing the competitors try to mimic what you do?
Yeah, so a couple of things there. You know, disruptions become a term that, you know, it's just popping up everywhere now, right?
It's the new sustainability.
It is. And we actually don't use it in our business a lot. At all, and if we go back to sort of thinking about the customer, you know, what customer sort of wakes up in the morning and thinks, oh, geez, I want to be disrupted today. They just want to get on with their life, right? And so, you know, our job, and number two, I mean, they're not, even the term our customer is a pretty arrogant kind of assertion. I mean, we don't own them in any sense of the word. quite the contrary, we have an extraordinary privilege to have an interaction with them that might help them in their sort of day-to-day life. But that can be really fleeting if we cock it up, right? So it's not the language that we tend to use inside the business. Going to your question about competitors, though, I think, yeah, I'm probably more concerned about a couple of students working out of a garage and living on a diet of, you know, Coke and chips.
2 minute noodles.
Yeah, 2 minute noodles. Yeah. Dry or boiled. come out with a really great idea. You know, that's the... And some really slick code.
So are the... You know, if you go to the big power companies in Australia, are they talking about Power Shop at the boardroom level and how it's changing their business?
I'm not at the board meetings.
I know, but what do you...
We see them pop up in places that, I don't know, I mean, it seems more than coincidence. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you, right? So, you know, we've got to assume that people are here to pick us off, for sure. If you pick a fight with people, that's expected, but you know what, that's what makes business fun.
Yeah. Another question. Why are people, you know, in terms of your churn, people leaving Power Shop, why do people move on from Power Shop?
I want to avoid the temptation to do a hard sales pitch here, but yeah, the market, the electricity market in Australia is riddled with lies and deception, right? So for 10 years, the primary method for signing people up to a electricity contract, at least in Victoria, was through door knocking. And the ACCC did a study a while back that identified the three most effective, you know, sales techniques at the doorstep. Number one, I've lost my dog. How they transition that to a contract is, it's impressive, right? Disgusting, but impressive. Number two, I work for the government. I kind of understand that one. Number three, can you please sign this bit of paper to verify that I've read your meter, upon which the pensioner gets signed up to a rapacious three-year contract. So that mentality has not left, okay? And so if you look at how energy deals are promoted in market, you know, one of the primary methods of promotion is to say, oh, it's X percent off. But what's not emphasised is that the baseline from which the discount is applied is variable. So technically, we could put an offer out in market that was 92% off, and it might still be more expensive than the competitor. So a lot of customers will leave because they've been hard sold another deal. Or they've got another deal that's got a honeymoon period and a really sweet discount, right? And, you know, for us, people leaving, you know, if we haven't done a good enough job to, you know, demonstrate that we provide, you know, durable value, then that's our problem. You know what I mean? It's not something where we kind of complain and go, well, you know, the customer shouldn't have left. Quite the contrary, we should have done a better job to keep them. There's probably a small percentage of customers who are accustomed to the traditional model of billing. Right, so our customers they don't have to prepay. They can just, you know, pay as they go or do traditional post-pay arrangements. But you know, the frequency of communication, the option of, you know, going into the shop and the expanded choice, all that sort of stuff. For some people, it's just not.
That's a complaint I get from. I've got a couple of mates who don't want to change because they just, it's too hard for them. They just can't be bothered with another thing to worry about.
Yeah, and I think we've got to do a better job at clarifying that people don't have to engage.
Yeah.
Right. They can engage, and they get benefits of, you know, reducing their consumption, having better visibility, all that sort of stuff. But they don't have to, and they still get a great deal. Mm.
So Internet of Things is obviously a big deal coming up, and something that we're dealing with a lot at Outwear, and it's something that's going to impact on, you know, people's houses and the way they use electricity and the way they use power. So last question from me is how does Power Shop thinking about the Internet of Things and how you guys are going to interact with it?
Yeah. I think for electricity, the Internet of Things has been around for a while. So it's probably one of the sectors where it's happened at least in some segments earlier than some other sectors. But again, I think there's a great opportunity there, but there's also a great temptation to run too far ahead of the curve and make the product more complex. So it's something that, yeah, we're thinking long and hard about, and there's some work underway, but we're not yet committed to, you know, what is the end solution. Bearing in mind that most customers today have zero knowledge about their electricity consumption, right? So 80% of the, I'm making that number up, but 80% of the value comes from getting just the gross level or aggregate level consumption data. If they've got that, and it doesn't even have to be on half-hour splits. If you've got that on a kind of daily or even a, you know, weekly basis, that is miles ahead of what people have had in the past.
Definitely. But as people get used to that level of information, they're going to say, oh, there is that spike. You know, what I want to drill into that spike and see what's actually causing it. You know, it'd be great, obviously, if you could just get that information. I have to go to the house and
Sniff the story,
but
yeah, absolutely. And that's something that you know, we're going to be working on in the next year. But again, we're not committed to a particular solution just yet.
Yep.
Ben, do you see PowerShop as a technology company or an electricity company?
Neither. Yeah.
Just a company.
Well, it's almost, I don't know, it sound too fluffy, but it's almost a group of people trying to help out another group of people with some problems.
Mm.
Right. And they're problems that are shared, which is, you know, why am I being ripped off? How can I kind of reduce my impact on the planet? Help me to save money. You know, that they're the human aspects of the experience. The fact that there's electrons involved or an essential service involved, it's almost contextual.
Mm.
And the fact that it's a mobile platform that through which it's delivered, that's just the vehicle, you know. But yeah, what lies at the heart of the business is really to try and understand the human journey of the customer.
So it's just one more follow on that. Is PowerShop a product or a service?
It's a bit of both, I think. It's a bit of both, but again, I think those labels, they're not labels that we kind of. It's not really what drives us in the business. We try and bring everything back to, how does the customer feel, and what do we need to do to alleviate their stress or celebrate their victories or, you know, vindicate their hatred in some cases. Mm. That's what it's about. And, you know, there's a combination of products and services that we try to provide that gives them the opportunity to do that.
Another question. I guess just talk a bit about the culture of PowerShop. What are the sort of things that you worry about in terms of the culture and the sort of people you have around you to enable what you do?
Yeah, I think the starting point is to recognise that, you know, culture can't be controlled or managed. And anyone who sort of sets out to, you know, run culture as if it's a military exercise it's destined to fail. Our people build the culture of PowerShop. And because they build it, they want to defend it and protect it and enable it to evolve, naturally in a way that it kind of makes us better. So what's really important for us is that our people, own decisions, take risks, are celebrated in their failures as well as their victories. And I think that's kind of, that's the thing I worry, I want to make sure that continues. We want to make sure that continues.
Cool.
Great.
All right. Well, thank you again for coming on and great to talk to you. And, you know, from my personal perspective, I think it's a great product. And I think the culture behind the teams that develop these products really shines through in the product. That's obvious to me, and it's obvious in the sort of the work that we do and the products that we develop for our clients. You really get that sense. I think you're doing a great job, and I think it's an amazing product, and it's having an impact on me, and it's having an impact on my friends, and that's great. So I just want to thank you for coming in, and cool.
Thank you. We're really lucky. We've got a great team that we work with, and you know, this morning it's great to be among friends. We're not always among friends. Often we're picking fights, so this is a nice
not
challenge.
On podcast, surely.
Not on the radio.
Cool.
Thanks.
Thank you.